listening to Making Good. I'm Renee Blanchard, founder and operator of Church Alley Cafe and Grocery, located here in New Orleans, Louisiana. Church Alley is a people-first, mission-driven small business that I opened in 2013. And the best part about owning a cafe is the people. So in this podcast, I interview the makers, the farmers, and the many interesting people I've met through the shops. The folks doing the good work here in Louisiana and all along the Gulf Coast. Let's get started.
My name is Ann Rolfes. I'm the director of the Louisiana Bucket Brigade. We are working in Louisiana to hasten the transition from fossil fuels with a concentration on communities that live right next to big industrial sites or future industrial sites.
Well, thank you so much for being here. I really appreciate your time. And we've worked in together in the past, so I'm also excited to reconnect.
I feel the same way. Thank you. Thanks for having me on the show. I'm honored to be here.
Thanks. So can you just talk, like you explained in your intro, you know, what you do, what the Louisiana Bucket Brigade is, but can you just like talk a little bit more about like, what does the name come from too? And exactly what are y'all doing right now?
The bucket is an easy to use air sampling device. And I started the organization 20 years ago with the idea to put these air sampling tools in the hands of people who were experiencing pollution from the refinery or from the chemical plant next door. And the reason that I was inspired by it is because I had seen people using this tool before, and I had seen in Louisiana, in Mossville specifically, how people responded to it. And it felt like this needs to be a homegrown effort. At the time, it was the buckets were being brought in by somebody from California. And so, you know, just based on people's responses to them and their clear relief in being able to captain their own ship and document their own air, we started the Bucket Brigade.
Yeah, so it's pretty interesting. I've worked a little bit with y'all in a couple different capacities when I worked for Greenpeace and also the Waterkeeper Alliance. And some of the work, just for people that don't understand, some of the work that when a community like notices that there's a lot of pollution happening, citizen science is like a huge piece of documenting. And that's kind of what the bucket does, right? Like,
I really think of the bucket actually as an organizing tool to engage people who are interested, because it is a way to take action. You're not just going to a meeting but you're doing something.
Right.
And for me, I try to strike a balance in the communities where we work between getting some amount of information about emissions, about health impacts, about people's exposure to really dangerous chemicals. But balancing gathering information with then the advocacy part, because you could spend all day, every day gathering information.
Yeah.
Our state understands there's a problem.
Right.
You know, it's not hard to understand that a family should not live next to a facility that pumps out carcinogens. The issue, of course, is the politics and who really controls the state, which is, of course, in part the petrochemical industry. So the way that I like to think about it is we gather some information and then we get out of that information gathering stage pretty quickly and use that information to change the problem, to solve the problem.
Yeah. During the oil spill, I was in meetings, I'm not sure where, and I had someone stood up and was like, we are literally being studied to death, right? Like there's so many studies and so much information being taken, and that's kind of how government agencies slow down the process to responsibility, to like these corporations having to take responsibility too.
Yeah, at that time during the BP oil disaster, I was in some meetings where the federal government came and wanted to study the problem. And people in the room revolted. It was a meeting at Dillard University.
Yeah.
And they said, how would you like it if we brought your car to a mechanic, but we never fixed it? Mm-hmm. To some degree, that's the issue. But I will say this. There aren't nearly enough studies on this part of the world about what people's exposure is and about what their resulting illness is. It's not as if we're drowning in evidence that shows people's harm from the pollution. But there is certainly enough data to understand that carcinogens are being emitted, and to understand that neurotoxins and chemicals that harm people's development are being emitted. And then, hello, all you need is an odometer or a tape measure to understand that people are awfully close to these very dangerous chemicals. And just that common sense piece of it is woefully absent and is really ignored, and our so-called regulators really twist themselves up into knots trying to evade just the most obvious common sense situation.
Yeah. I mean, that photo, I mean, it's iconic at this point. I think it was taken in the late 90s or early 2000s of that older Black woman standing in front of her window inside her house, and the petrochemical is just like right on the other side of the window.
Yeah, that's right. That was Clara Smith in Norco, Louisiana, and she is passed. But you have that situation, of course, up and down the river where the big petrochemical plants went and moved into the footprint where the plantations had been. Right. And the Black communities that had fought for and won their emancipation that have sprung up between those big parcels of land are now experiencing the next generation of what plantation slavery meant.
Yes.
You're not enslaved anymore, but your descendants are exposed to all these chemicals. And just another note, the chemical plants and refineries need the same things that the plantations did, which was big pieces of land, access to the Mississippi River, and a political system that will facilitate abuse of human beings.
Yeah, disregarding the humanity of the people that live there.
Absolutely. I think that's a great point, because in order to do that, in order to say that we're going to sacrifice this community to petrochemical production, you have to decide that in some way something's wrong with them, or they are less than.
Right.
That it's their fault, for example, that they're in this situation, which is, of course, racist and ridiculous.
Yeah. And so that is, so can you define fence line community? I mean, from my understanding, that's basically what a fence line community is.
Yes, a fence line community is one that is on the fence line of a petrochemical plant. And so people might live within 25 feet of a huge, giant tank that has millions of gallons of oil. And you can find that up and down the Mississippi River. And in Lake Charles, actually, and across the lake, and in Westlake and Sulphur, and then in Cameron Parish too.
Yeah, one of the issues I worked on when I lived in D.C. with Lois and worked for Lois Gibbs is school siting, and it was, I must have been like 26, so it was a while ago, and just to think that there were, I mean, still probably are not laws of where how close a school can be to a source of pollution, like an emitting active source of pollution. And that's like, it's just mind blowing. And it was, people don't understand I think we understand it here probably more because we see it, but it's still just like part of the landscape almost when you're driving across the state is seeing these fence line communities, you know, and these polluting sources like right next to these homes.
I think people have a lot of faith in government, actually, or at least certain people do.
Right.
And so they think that, of course, well, maybe it doesn't look right, or maybe it seems a bit off to have that situation, but, oh, well, if it were really dangerous, they wouldn't let that happen.
That's true.
Or somebody must be looking out. And in fact, the Environmental Protection Agency, which is the federal government's regulatory body, should be on environmental matters and on health matters, as well as the Louisiana Department of Environmental Quality, absolutely are evading responsibility and certainly aren't doing their job. Every time we have taken on a polluter in court, we have sued somebody, for example, for either too much pollution, too many accidents, or for wanting to put their place, their facility too close to a community. When we go into court to argue against them, you know, for ourselves and with the community, with our community partners, every single time you see the state lawyers at the table with industry lawyers.
Right.
Every time, 20 years. It's never been that the state has been with us against the industry. It has always been industry and government arm in arm to force pollution on the communities.
Yeah. And they also just move back and forth. Like you'll see someone within the state retiring or leaving their job, and their announcement is that they're going work for one of these companies too.
The best example we have of that is the man who is currently the secretary of the Department of Environmental Quality. The secretary is the top job there, and he was appointed by Governor Edwards. His name is Chuck Carr Brown. Where did he work? Exxon. An Exxon retiree. He worked there for almost 20 years. Really, where do you think the man's loyalties lie? It's sad. It's really tragic. I guess the good news is that you have amazing people within Louisiana who are standing up and demanding enforcement of the law, demanding action, managing to prevent expansions or prevent construction. We're winning. And so that's the good news in the face of this government recalcitrance.
Yeah. Yeah. So you mentioned a little bit earlier that the bucket is an organizing tool. I know we always hear like community organizers or what, you know, community organizing, that's what works and that kind of stuff. Can you just give a brief definition of community organizing and like how y'all use that and implement that tactic?
Yeah, I think organizing can be a really overused word. Mm-hmm. And because there isn't an actual profession as there is with perhaps being a lawyer or a doctor or a dentist or an accountant or something, the word can actually be misused. And the way that we operate is that we work with people who are next to these big facilities. When we first meet them, they're usually in various situations. They could be a group that is not a group yet, but maybe in their neighborhood, there was just a terrible accident from the neighboring facility. This happened in St. Rose. And so they decide they want to do something, and then they form a group to be able to advocate together. And in St. Rose, after a big accident at a tank farm called IMTT, they formed St. Rose Community One Voice. And so what happens is that community group will remain in touch with the residents through various methods. They might go door to door via flyers. They might do mass texting of the residents. They might hold community meetings. And we, as the Bucket Brigade, help that community group to figure out what the best tools and techniques are to reach their neighbors and then to gather as many people as possible to advocate for the community goals. In St. Rose, for example, people decided that they did not want the tank farm to expand. It was applying for a permit. And so we worked together and prevented that facility from expanding. And there was a Shell asphalt refinery, and we managed to get that place actually shut down. It was simply too close to the neighborhood. And so that's you know, example of the kind of things we do.
Yeah. So someone calls y'all or some, you know, I mean, y'all have been around a long time now and worked with a lot of communities in Louisiana. And so people just word of mouth hear about y'all or do a Google search and then give you a call and tell you what's going on. And someone from your organization meets with them and just gives them resources and then starts building from there.
That is how it works. It's interesting how it's usually somebody's relative who lives down the river or up the river. So again, with the St. Rose example, they were cousins with people who had lived in Norco. And so when people in St. Rose called their cousin, Marjorie Richard, to say, "Hey, I know you've dealt with this pollution. We're experiencing it now too." Margie says, "You know, call the Bucket Brigade." And that's how that happens.
Yeah.
Usually, you know, to really engage in these fights, Renee, it takes a lot on the part of the community members. They essentially have to be on call 24/7, willing to talk to the media, willing to spend a long time talking to their friends and neighbors about what the problem is and then what the solutions are. And it's actually a kind of a rare person who will devote basically their lives to this for a time. And I think a a great example of that, if you look in 20 years, there are two women from this area who have won the Goldman Award.
Yes.
The Goldman Award is the, you know, the highest honor you can achieve for grassroots environmental advocacy. Mm-hmm. Margie Richard won in the early 2000s for her work in Norco targeting Shell. And then most recently last year, Sharon Levine in St. James Parish won for her work to stop Formosa. And so it takes an extraordinary person. And it's kind of amazing in my work, you know, these 20 some odd years, I've always known that person. It, you know, it went from Norco to New Sarpy to Chalmette to Baton Rouge. And it just has really happened organically. So it's not as if we have, you know, 10 fights happening at once. We'll have one or two, but we will be there in a very profound way on the phone multiple times a day with our partners in the neighborhood, a couple of times a week, really, really with a deep understanding of what's happening, really listening to people and figuring out what resources we can bring to support them.
Yeah, it's interesting. And I also think about in some of the issues I've worked on and just knowing whatever, you know, just being from down here, from Lafayette, is that with you'll have people in the community or within families will work at the facilities too. So you have, like, that's also why it's difficult to stand up, you know, or to be vocal. Because you're...
Well, that's an issue. Oh, excuse me.
No, go ahead. Yeah.
Well, we don't have that issue too much along the river. It's kind of amazing how little they do hire from the facilities. And if you look at the exit gates come quitting time, you'll see them driving back to basically bedroom communities of Baton Rouge, right? Going to Prairieville or somewhere else, kind of a more recent subdivision. They're certainly not going 50 feet to the fence line neighborhood. But your point is absolutely accurate in some parts of the state. And we're encountering this, again, in a really deep way in Lake Charles, where we are working to prevent construction of almost 10 gas export terminals along our coast.
Wow.
And it is extremely challenging work there with a population that understands the price they've paid for all this pollution, yet doesn't necessarily understand what could be different.
Right.
And boy, that allegiance to industry is quite powerful.
Yeah. How exactly did you get involved? I know you're one of the founding director, but how exactly did you get involved in starting this? And you have a founding board as well that y'all kind of all came together. Can you just talk a little bit?
Yeah, definitely. I had been working in West Africa on issues of oil pollution in Nigeria, and I was between West Africa and California where I was living at the time. And as I'm doing this work, of course, I'm aware that there's a problem in Louisiana. I did not have deep familiarity with it. I grew up in Lafayette amidst a community that was very pro-oil. Some of my family members worked for the oil industry. I thought oil was good. That's definitely the message that you get in Lafayette. Mm-hmm. But when I went to West Africa in the Peace Corps, I started to understand that oil was actually quite a significant problem. And I began to learn about oil companies' absolute abuse and destruction of entire parts of the world. So I think it's not unusual. Sometimes you have to go around the world to understand what's happening in your own home. And that absolutely happened to me. So I did that. But then it was nagging at me. Something's happening here. So I did move home to work on this subject, but didn't really know exactly what I would do. I mean, I'm just going to tell you this story because if anybody, you know, who's in this sort of knowing, sometimes you don't know, right, what you're doing in your life. The Zora Neale Hurston autobiography, Dust Tracks on a Road, she says, there are years that bring questions and years that bring answers.
Yeah, right.
And when I first moved back to Louisiana, I was in New Orleans on a front porch and I heard the sound of something coming down the street and I didn't know what it was. And I was trying to figure out my place here. And I said, well, whatever this is, it's going to tell me something. And you know how you do that sometimes.
Yeah. And, show me a sign.
What passed but a mosquito truck putting a whole fog out behind it? So in the message I received that day was, oh my gosh, I'm in a fog. What am I doing? I don't know. you know, you could say there were other messages there, but that's the one I got. But but I just started to try to call everybody I knew who was involved in this, or not, I didn't know anybody I knew of.
Yeah.
And, you know, some people are responsive, some people aren't. Eventually, I was invited to Mossville, where a man, a really wonderful person named Denny Larson, who had been training local residents to use the buckets. He was the one from California.
Right.
I was invited to a meeting where he and local people were talking about the results. And when I saw how people responded to being able to take their own samples and to document the problem for themselves, I was really inspired. In Nigeria and also in the Peace Corps in West Africa, I had been working from the point of view of trying to support the community and whatever their goals were.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's the orientation I came home with also. I mean, you could do this work from all kinds of different angles, right? You could be in the legislature, you could be doing fence line work, you know, you could be being a researcher or a scientist, but I wanted to collaborate with the people who were most impacted. I knew that. I don't think I articulated at the time, but that's just what I had always done.
Mm-hmm.
And so I met the women the people in Mossville, and then I started to work part-time for the group from California and training people along the Mississippi River to take samples. And people were really enthusiastic about it. And then generously, that organization, which was Communities for a Better Environment, switched the grant funding, was willing to switch the grant funding to Louisiana. And so I worked with a number of women, including Marjorie Richard and a woman named Shonda Lee and Dorothy Jenkins, to form an organization. And then I started being the director, and, you know, that's how it's been.
Yeah.
You know, me at the Bucker Brigade, and with of course, really close partnerships with people who are in the impacted communities.
Yeah. I was just thinking about that bucket is just so interesting too. Like it is an organizing tool, but it's also an empowerment tool. Like, it's so easy to see things happen and be like, well, someone else is smarter or better or louder, you know, who can talk about this issue or get involved. And the bucket kind of helps everyone be in that same spot too, you know, like you can learn to use it, and using a small or being involved in a small organizing tool helps you see yourself being involved in something larger too. Interesting.
Yes. And a really important aspect of, I guess you would say organizing, is this understanding that everybody has a role to play.
Yeah.
And so, yes, some people will be air samplers, and it is really important because people do it on their own. They don't have to call me. They don't have to call anybody to report the pollution. They just take an air sample and then they send it to the lab. Mm-hmm. And there are all kinds of other roles, right? Some people do like to be spokespeople. Some people like to do the running to get an event together. In St. Charles Parish in Norco, where I first started my work here, there was a woman who was bedridden. She had not gotten out of bed in 10 years, but she could smell the odors in her house. And so she would make calls from her bed and complain about Shell Chemical next door. And that created a very long running record of pollution and exposure. And so that is always the example that I give to people, that there is a woman, a bedridden woman, who played a crucial role. We can all do something.
Yeah. Well, that, you know, some of the work we did, I helped on after the BP oil spill, was tracking, was looking at calls from fishermen who are out in the Gulf or different, or these sky, what is that organization? Sky Truth, who looks at data.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And sees pollution over time happening over time. Is that those calls from like anyone that sees a sheen in the Gulf is super helpful to showing patterns over a long period of time. I feel like that's not a lot really well known, that if you do see something going on, there is a number that you can call, and just maybe it is something, maybe it's not, maybe it's something that's been happening that the community does need additional information on too.
Yeah. And it's amazing how just a few people making reports can make a difference.
Yeah.
In St. Rose, for example, we had something like 380 reports to the map you're referencing over several months period. And at the time, it was the Obama administration and Gina McCarthy was the head of the EPA. And mm-hmm. so when we met with her, we were able to bring her this very, very thick stack of firsthand accounts from the neighborhood, which, as you can imagine, were quite moving. You know, saying things from, I'm on my front porch, I'm elderly, I have to go inside because I can't breathe from the smells, to I'm a mom, I'm having to call my child in from playing outside because the odors are so bad, I don't want him exposed.
Yeah.
And so that's really important information to get reports from regular people, absolutely.
Yeah. What are some of the issues, what is the big issues that you're all working on right now? Y'all had some really good wins in the last year
yes.
or two.
Yep. Yep. I mean, we, you know, I feel as if we have, that we can always win.
Yeah.
Honestly. I mean, I don't say that in a cavalier way. Mm-hmm. The challenge is getting enough people who know how to do this. You know, people are listening and are interested in doing this kind of work. Go to our website because we have a couple of job openings.
Yeah.
It's hard to find people who know how to do this work because this region has really been underfunded in terms of our environmental movement.
Yeah.
It's not as if we have a generation of people who understand how to do it. And
no.
and that's a problem, of course, and yet it's not rocket science, right? And people mm-hmm. can be trained and can learn how to do it.
Yes.
And so when we can focus on a goal, stopping a plant or, you know, getting air monitoring in, whatever it is, really, we usually do win because we sink in a really detailed, profound way. It's not like we get on a conference call twice a month. No, we're there. We know what's happening. We hear what people are saying.
Yeah.
We put resources behind that. And so we can win. The challenge is, of course, you know, there's so many sites and not enough people,
yeah.
as well as our state's complicity with this industry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What is one of the communities that you're working with right now?
Well, what's interesting right now is that we have an initiative in Calcasieu Parish in the western part of the state, and Cameron Parish, to prevent construction of nearly a dozen gas export terminals.
Mm-hmm.
People probably do not know that our state and the gas industry have a really radical plan to transform our coasts from our beautiful coast that offers amazing storm protection to a place where we have 12 gas export terminals that we would be using to ship gas, you know, far, far from us to other countries, you know, Asia being the primary target. And so that's a big deal, right? When we're getting all this fracked gas, which is a problem in and of itself, and then we're willing to pipe it dangerously across our state
yeah.
to put on ships to send away. I mean, do you even know that? Nobody knows that's happening. Nobody
no.
has any idea.
No.
You know, nobody wants that. That's insane. And what's interesting, Renee, is that it's paired with serious, be polite, disinformation, or you could be honest and call it lies from industry. So just as an example, in the newspaper here in New Orleans last week, there's an article about one of the export gas terminals expanding its exports. And then it says, and then it pivots to talking about the situation in Russia and Ukraine.
Mm-hmm.
And that gas is not going there.
No.
Right? Did the company provide documentation that gas was going there? I mean, it's just mind-boggling,
yeah.
right? The way that they'll lie in order to further their business. Another example is at a hearing I was at last week, somebody stood up and said, it'll lower gas prices.
Right.
We are not talking about gasoline.
No.
Hello.
No.
It's the kind of gas, you know, it's a gas. It's gas that would heat your home or would
yeah.
be in your stove when you turn it on. So this level of misinformation / lies is profound.
Mm-hmm.
And something that we're taking really seriously to counter.
Yeah. Yeah. Are y'all working on anything around New Orleans, or is there an issue, something happening around here that people could?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, there are a couple of things happening. In St. James Parish, Formosa is on the ropes. It's not dead yet. So we're continuing to monitor that situation. Okay. And then the other situation is that there is an amazing group led by two sisters, Joe and Joy Banner, in St. John Parish. They have a group called the Descendants Project. And so we're collaborating with them to both stop a huge grain elevator that would destroy their historic Black community, and also to usher in some other types of business here. Because that's the real problem, is that, as my coworker Sheila Tahir said, our state officials have a sad lack of imagination, right? So right. All we keep doing is permitting petrochemical plants. Uh-huh. I know you're interested in this too. And what Joe and Joy Banner are doing, and really they're doing it, and then we're also doing it with them, is we're ushering in something else. So, for example, they've been hosting these workshops for film training. Yeah. We are hosting a grant writing workshop, because actually this is going to maybe sound funny, but there's actually a need for a lot more grant writers in this part of the world, right? People to write up applications to foundations to get funding for their organization. Mm-hmm. And there actually aren't very many here. And yet there are a lot of grassroots environmental groups that need that help. Yeah. So we're starting a training program for that in a couple of weeks. We are working to get more solar power in this part of the world, and more renewable energy. And so as we, you know, on the one hand, we're trying to stop the expansion, and then on the other, we're trying to help birth something different.
Yeah. I mean, that's what I always think about. I was like, people down here, you know, I mean, it's obvious to us. I feel like there's so much innovation, right? Like, and
exactly.
And even the people that they work offshore, they work in these facilities, they know they have the skills, you know, to do something new too, right? Like, they're the ones with the technical skills that we can move forward with, so that we're not, you know, destroying this land that we need to keep living here too.
That's right. And if you read about the fabrication of one of the country's first offshore wind farms, you find that Louisiana has its fingerprints all over it. Mm-hmm. A firm from HOMA helped to make the base of the windmills off of Block Island, which is a big offshore wind farm up in the Northeast. Hmm. Block Island, which is Rhode Island.
Yeah.
And people, our newspaper did a really great series on this. The reporter's Tristan Barak, and I actually encourage your listeners to go and read that series, because when you read that series, it'll give you hope about what is actually possible in a different industry that can be good for our state.
Yeah, I think that the words like lack of imagination from a state level is just so important, because we are doing interesting things, but also we feed and produce so much for the rest of the country. You know, we're not, so much of the rest of the country is so dependent on our innovation and what we're already doing here.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, they're certainly dependent on the gas from this part of the world, the oil and gas. And there just is something different that we can do. You know, we don't just need to keep taking trade trips to other countries. This truly happens.
Yeah.
Our economic development officials get a map of the river parishes. This map is on the Port of South Louisiana's website. You can just go look at it. Mm-hmm. They travel with these maps and they say, this is empty, this is empty, this is empty. And they go to every corner of the globe, to every horrible polluter. Honestly, this is what they do. They go to every corner of the world showing maps. Oh, there's nothing here, right? Mm-hmm. Their maps don't show people. They don't show playgrounds or schools or churches. There is quite a lot here. And our own state officials are peddling the idea that nobody is here, and we should build the world's largest plastics plant on it. I mean, it's a bit ridiculous.
Yeah. Yeah. What are some of the stuff that y'all are doing? Like, what is some of the stuff that's coming up for y'all?
Every month in Lake Charles, we have what's called a sunset gathering. Mm-hmm. So people can just look at our website if they're in that part of the state and want to attend. The point of those is to appreciate what's already there, right? It's mm-hmm. a beautiful part of the world. And actually the spot from which we have our gathering, when you see the sunset, the sunset would be blocked if they build one of the facilities that's called uh-huh. Driftwood Gas Terminal. So we have that. And then we have a couple of different trainings coming up. The Descendants Project is hosting different aspects of film industry careers. So coming up is a costume workshop, and also I think there'll be a lighting workshop after that. But people should go to the Descendants Project Facebook page to see that. And then on our Facebook page, we have been advertising our grant writing workshop. So those are the things that are happening in the immediate future. As other stuff comes up, of course, it's on our website and in our social media.
Yeah, cool. This is so interesting. I really appreciate your time just kind of explaining everything that's going on. And y'all have been here for so long and been working with so many different communities and just really had a big impact on the progress we have seen. You know, like, I mean, y'all have really been instrumental for, you know, two decades. And I just really appreciate the work that you do and the work that everyone that is involved in the Bucket Brigades has done for all of us, for all the families across Louisiana. So I really appreciate your time, Ann.
Well, thanks. That's really nice. And I just got to give that back to you, because for a while, our office was right across the street yeah. from Church Valley.
That's true.
And that place is very important. I mean, to be able to go into a business and know without question that it shares our values, that when I spend my money here and my time here, I'm supporting people who are trying to do good in the world and who are doing good in the world. That makes a really big difference. So thanks right back to you.
Oh, thank you. All right. Well, thanks so much.
All right. Beautiful. Thanks,
okay.
Renee.
Okay. Thanks. All right. Thank you so much.
Bye.
I appreciate you. All right. Bye-bye.
Yeah. Appreciate you. Bye. Okay.
That's all for today. Thanks so much for listening to Making Good. You can find our podcast on all the platforms you find your favorite podcasts. You can also find a transcript of this episode and all of our episodes on our website, churchalley.store. If you loved this episode, please share it and let others know about the good work of Church Alley Cafe and Grocery. Thanks again for listening to Making Good. I hope you have a really good day. We'll see you next time. Thank you.